This is Power for Living, the Bible teaching ministry of Christ the King Church in Wakefield, Massachusetts. I'm your host, Feliciano Segundo, and our teacher is Father Michael Carl. So get out your Bibles and let's get started.
Well, everyone, take out the teaching outline from your bulletin so you can be ready to follow along. We are still in our teaching series on the Gospel of John. And our passage today is John chapter 9. Now, you note there are 41 verses in the chapter, and we're going to kind of go through the entire chapter very briefly because it's an amazing story. This is the story of the man born blind. And there's actually some parts of this that are almost, I say almost, kind of funny if you look at it that way. And the man born blind who was healed is the one who has some of the best lines in the story. But we're going to check that out shortly. Now, the man was born blind. So out of curiosity, I looked up to see statistically how many U.S. children are born with some kind of birth defect. And statistically, it comes out, according to a couple of websites and the Centers for Disease Control, that one out of every 33 babies born in the United States has some sort of birth defect. Most of those show up within the first 3 months of the pregnancy and are detectable. And some are actually harmless, though some of the defects can be fatal. They can have spinal bifida among one of them. But the most common birth defect among all babies born in the United States is a heart problem of one sort or the other. And it's interesting that it would turn out to be that, considering the nature of how humankind is born in sin. Sort of ironic in a way that heart problems would be the most common birth defect. Now, these are physical defects, mind you, but it just seems kind of, there's some sort of irony to this. That because every human being who's ever been born has been born with a heart problem, in a way. So, anyway, babies born blind, ironically also, because this is what's the feature of our story today, is way down the list, where babies born who can't see right away, that's way down the list of the natural birth defects. Now, everyone turn to John chapter 9, and I'm going to read John 9 verses 1 through 12 to get us started, although we are actually going to go through pretty much the entire chapter. Now, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the man with the clay. You can see that's the bulletin cover photo for today. And he said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Therefore, the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, "Is not this he who sat and begged?" Some said, "This is he." Others said, "He's like him." And he said, "I am he." Therefore, they said to him, "Well, how were your eyes opened?" He answered and said, "A man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed, and I received sight." Then they said to him, "Where is he?" And he said, "I do not know." Well, that's the first 12 verses. Now, Jesus is walking along with his disciples. Now, keep in mind that they're still in Jerusalem. This is immediately following all of the events of John chapters 7 and 8. They're near the temple, and they see the man who was born blind. Right away in verse 1, the disciples ask a very common question. What's the question that the disciples ask Jesus here? Who sinned? Think about this for a second. Why is this somewhat of an ordinary common question that people will ask?
They think anything that went wrong is because of their sin.
Can you say that again?
They think that anything that's gone wrong in their life is due to them committing sin.
Yeah. How many times have you heard somebody, God must hate me? Or, God, what did I do to deserve this? Have you ever asked that question? That's the basis of what they're saying. Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents that he was born blind? Now, part of the question is totally illogical if you think about it. Think about this. They're asking if this man had sinned and that he was born blind. Think about the fact that this is sort of out of order, don't you think? How can you sin before you're born and then be born blind because you sinned? But that's the nature also of what the disciples' question means. They ask who sinned. The man or his parents, that the man was born blind. Again, it's somewhat illogical to think that the man himself had sinned and therefore he was as a result born blind. So it is kind of off if you think about it, right?
Well, think about it. We're born sinners
anyway. Yep, and that's true. And that's where this is ultimately leading, is we are all born in sin. Think about this too. At the same time, were his parents being punished for sin by having their child be born blind? The very nature of this question calls the character of God into question. Think about it. They're asking if the parents were being punished for their sin by having their child be born blind. So they somehow believe that God would curse a baby by having him be born with a lifelong defect to punish the parents. Now, we see Jesus' answer in verse 3. Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." That's a deeply wonderful answer. Why is Jesus' answer here reassuring to us?
We're supposed to be glorifying him.
Okay, it would be glorifying him. There's more to it than that. Why is Jesus' answer really reassuring?
Because when we do go through trouble and hard times, there is something good will come of it that will reveal God's mercy.
That's good. When you go through difficulties, there's going to be some good come from it. But there's also another reassuring factor in this answer. Jesus' answer should give us a lot of comfort. What we can know is that when some tragic thing happens, it's not because God is punishing us for something. Think about it. If God inflicted disease or disaster on everyone for a sin they commit, we'd never have anything but bad things happen to us in this life. If God punished us with some kind of disaster or disease for our sin, because we're naturally sinful, that's all we would ever get in this life, is sin and disease and disaster. We're all sinners. We deserve condemnation. So God could rightfully zap every one of us with an unlimited list of misfortunes. Everybody following me here? However, that's not Jesus' answer. He says, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. What does this mean? It means, as Joyce was hinting at here, that there is a higher purpose for things happening. There is a redemptive, or there are redemptive reasons for the things that take place in this life. There is a higher purpose behind everything. God is in control. Let's get that straight this morning. God is in control. Let's everybody say this together. God is in control. All right? So there's nothing random happening. Things are not spinning out of control. Things are not outside of God's attention and reach. And so any disaster that happens is not a surprise to God. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that Hurricane Maria was going to flatten Puerto Rico. You know, God's not going to say that. He's totally aware of everything that's going on, and his redemptive purposes are at work, even in the things where we don't see it. And man, is that a good thing. Because we don't see a lot of things, do we? Still, the healing caused quite a stir in the city. Some of the neighbors said, "Is not this he who sat and begged?" In verse 9, the man answers, "I'm he." But that didn't satisfy the curious minds of the people, and they had more questions. Look at verse 10. What else did they ask the man? What else did they ask the man born blind in verse 10? Yeah, how were your eyes opened? How did it happen? How were your eyes opened? The man answered from what he knew. "A man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed, and I received sight." Then he has to tell them he doesn't know where Jesus is. Okay. Verses 13 through 34 take us again to some conflict. Surprise, surprise. Because the Pharisees are a part of this little scenario. There's a conflict between the man, his parents, and of course, our major nemesis, the Pharisees here. Someone brings the man to the Pharisees, and John the Apostle makes sure he tells us that it was again on a Sabbath day that Jesus did a healing miracle. John loves to insert that little detail in a lot of these, and Jesus loved to go heal on the Sabbath because he had this running testimony of how it's God perfectly within God's will to do good on the Sabbath. Okay, so the Pharisees asked the man how he was healed, and he said, "He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." But in verse 16, we have the same song, only a different verse. In verse 16, what do the Pharisees say? Come on now. This man is not from God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. Okay? John tells us that some others said, "Well, how can a man who is a sinner do such things?" The man, not knowing yet who Jesus was, simply said that he thought Jesus was a prophet. Good answer, you know, if you're not really totally aware of who Jesus is, that's a good place to start because that was one of the three parts of Jesus' identity and ministry as prophet, priest, and king. Now we see in the next verses that the Pharisees weren't content to just let the matter go. They can't just let go. So they bring in the man's parents. They question the mom and dad. Now the mom and dad are terrified of the Pharisees. So they take the safe route. How do the parents answer the Pharisees?
They say, "That's the man that was healed."
Yep, they say that was the man that was healed, but what else do they tell the Pharisees? Come on.
He was born blind.
That he was born blind, that's true. We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. Verse 21. What do they say?
He's of age, ask him.
There we go. He's old enough. Ask him yourself. The parents were terrified of the Pharisees because the Pharisees had let it be known that if anybody who said they believed in Jesus would be thrown out of the synagogue. Once more, we see that the Pharisees have no intention of ever admitting that Jesus was the Messiah. That was from the get-go. It was out of the questions. So his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone who confessed that he was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He's of age. Ask him." Good question here, though. What kind of a religious establishment do you have if people who have received miracles in their lives are afraid to testify about their miracle? It's one of those good philosophical questions, isn't it? What kind of religious establishment do we have here? If you've had a miracle happen in your life that you're actually afraid to tell people about it for fear that there would be reprisals against you for testifying about your miracle. And that's exactly what we have here in this scene. The parents are terrified to say, yes, Jesus healed our son, and as a result, we believe that Jesus is the Messiah. And again, we see that the Pharisees, again, had no intention of ever admitting that Jesus was their Messiah. This past week, I was talking about the Pharisees and their belief in the Messiah, or the lack thereof. And the person with whom I spoke was saying and made a great observation. The Pharisees really weren't looking for or interested in having their Messiah come. Think about that. They had completely dismissed the interest of actually having their Messiah come. They weren't interested in him showing up. Think about that. Because, and there's a good reason also to suspect that this is true. If someone says they believe that this man Jesus might be the Messiah, and if the Pharisees were really interested in seeing their Messiah, don't you think they might have been interested enough to honestly investigate the claims? Have you thought about that? If you were looking for your Messiah to come, and somebody was actually starting to think, or a lot of somebodies were actually beginning to think, that maybe this guy, maybe he is the Messiah. Don't you think they might be sufficiently interested or excited enough to try to at least find out and investigate if whether or not the claims were true? But that's not what we see here. At every turn, we see the Pharisees and the scribes dogging, harassing, that's one of your blanks, and plotting against Jesus. Their hardness of heart is apparent in the next verse. In verse 24, the Pharisees can't help themselves. The verse says, so they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man, speaking of Jesus, is a sinner. That's the Pharisees. We know that this man is a sinner. They can't help themselves because their interest is totally opposed to the possibility of their Messiah ever actually appearing on the scene, unless he's all dressed up and looks exactly as the Messiah they pictured coming in their minds. And maybe even then they weren't that interested because they had no interest. If it was remotely possible that Jesus would have been the Messiah, no interest whatsoever. As a matter of fact, you go back into the early chapters of the Gospel of Mark and Matthew and Luke and even John, and the first thing that happens is the Pharisees are starting in on Jesus saying, this man cannot possibly be the Messiah. From the very beginning, they ruled out the possibility of them believing that Jesus was the Messiah. So I think the observation of this person was astute. They didn't want their Messiah to come because he'd interrupt their act and get in the way. Does anyone remember how or why the Pharisees were accusing Jesus of being a sinner in this passage?
Because he did work on the Sabbath.
Yeah, he healed on the Sabbath. My goodness, he healed people on the Sabbath because they decided that healing, if it wasn't life-sustaining, healing was work. In the Pharisees' eyes, if someone didn't have a life-threatening situation, they would tell you, come back tomorrow, because anything less than life-sustaining treatment was considered work by the Pharisees. So that included the men born blind, the man by the pool of Siloam, the man who was brought down, lowered through Peter's roof on the stretcher. Since it wasn't life-threatening, you can't heal on the Sabbath. But yes, Jesus healed people on the Sabbath. That, so far, was the only grounds they could use to accuse Jesus of anything. Now, the man responds pretty matter-of-factly. He says, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. The Pharisees, again, couldn't help themselves. In verse 26, they say to the man accusingly, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? Well, in verse 27, this is where I think the man was having a little bit of fun with the Pharisees. Look at how he responds to the Pharisees' demand. He answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? I think the guy just had to give him the shot right there, you know. That's really kind of gutsy and funny at the same time, if you think about it. He tells them they weren't listening the first time. He told them how Jesus healed him. Then, I think kind of tongue-in-cheek, he says, do you also want to become his disciples? The man must have known the Pharisees were beside themselves with jealousy over Jesus. That's no doubt why he took certain delight in ribbing them with the question, do you want to become his disciples? Now in verses 30 and 33, the man gives the perfect answer to the Pharisees. This was very succinct, straight, and to the point. And it's beautiful because it shows that the man who was healed had more understanding of the mercy of God than the Pharisees had. Look at what it says. The man answered and said to them, why? This is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from. Yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. This is the man born blind, talking to the Pharisees here. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of the one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Now, there's a little hint here that Jesus might actually be the Messiah in this man's words. Can anybody tell me what it is?
Well, if he wasn't from God, how could he do it?
Right. Okay, that's part of it. It's even more profound. Or maybe not profound, but it's even more detail specific.
He could do nothing.
You want to become his disciples?
No. Look at the words, for since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. That's one of the miracles ascribed to the Messiah, to open the eyes of the blind, especially those who were born blind. Only the Messiah would be able to open the eyes of someone who was born blind. And here's Jesus opening the eyes of the man who was born blind, and there's the man testifying to the Pharisees, since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone who opened the eyes of one who was born blind. It hasn't been heard of. This hasn't been done since the beginning of time. It hasn't happened. But yet, it happened right here today to me, he tells them. And if he were not from God, he could do nothing. That kind of goes along with what Jesus said, right? Apart from me, you can do nothing. You could almost preach a sermon from this man's answer. Matter of fact, that's kind of what's going on right now anyway. Not only that, the man put on a heavy barb in his answer. And whether he meant to or not, he hinted that he believed Jesus was and is the Messiah. Profound. Right. Since the world began, it's been unheard of that anyone has opened the eyes of one who was born blind. The Pharisees should have been wincing. But instead, they weren't. What did they do to the man? Look at the verse. They kicked him out. They kicked him out of the synagogue. They said, more or less, you're excommunicated. Goodbye. Now, the man goes out. Jesus hears about it. And Jesus says to the man, do you believe in the Son of God? Do you believe in the Son of God? The man asked him who he is, and Jesus answers in the third person, interestingly. You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. What was the man's response to that?
Believe.
What was that?
Believe.
Right. Lord, I believe. Jesus immediately shifted gears and said, for judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. Here he reflects on the prophecy from Isaiah about opening the eyes of the blind. Here he reflects on the profound nature of messianic prophecy. But Jesus gets the last word in this chapter. Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. Let's let Jesus this day touch our spiritual eyes so that we will really be able to see. This is a positive note on which to end the teaching time today, because what it talks about is Jesus opening our eyes so we can see spiritually, clearly, the things of God. And that's worth everything. So let's humble ourselves and let Jesus touch us and open our eyes by admitting that we are blind. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's edition of Power for Living. If you happen to miss any of our other programs, be sure to go to our podcast page at christthekingnorthshore.podbean.com. And you can also visit our website at www.ctknorthshore.org. If this program has been a blessing, feel free to let us know. Write us at Power for Living, care of Christ the King Church, 4 Railroad Avenue, Suite 309 in Wakefield, Massachusetts, 01880. Or you can also send us an email at christthekingnorthshore@gmail.com. You can be a part of this gospel ministry by becoming a patron of Power for Living. You can find out how by clicking the Become a Patron button at the top of our podcast page. That's it for this week, and until next time, remember that Jesus is your power for living.